Hey, everybody, this is Kevin, and I want to announce a new podcast that we're starting in 2020. It's called the Inhuman Resources Podcast. We're going to talk about workplace nonsense, bad bosses, everything we despise about corporate America, corporate life in the West, how we're never going to retire, and it's just going to go on and on and on forever, and it's horrible. And we want your workplace horror stories. I want you to go to inhumanpodcast.com. And look for the employee suggestion box. We welcome any story about idiocy, nonsense, garbage in the workplace. And we'll be releasing episodes here very soon. Thanks. Hey, everybody, this is Kevin Kautzman with the podcast Get This. It's a show about things people love. I'm coming to you from the studio here in upstate Manhattan, January 11th in the foul year of our Lord, 2020. And I'm joined by a guest today, Giselle Muse. Giselle, how are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you. And, you know, here we are in this unusually balmy, warm day for January.
It is. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's like, what, 68 degrees or something?
Yeah. I didn't have to wear a jacket. And that's the most exciting thing that's happened all year, I guess, until this.
Oh, right. Well, of course. This is your first podcast.
Yes, it is.
All right. High five.
Woo!
Bring it up. That's good. I love being the first podcast that people are on. I think that this is... It's not even the future, it's the now.
And absolutely.
It's a fun thing to do. I love it. It's like strange. We're in the 20s again, and radio is back, baby.
Radio, yes, you know it is. Like, I'm totally a podcast person now.
Right. You were telling me before. You know, before we get into that, you know, again, this is the show about things people love. So what is it you love? What is it you want to talk about today?
Ooh, well, I realize I provided a very heady topic for this when we talked previously.
Yeah.
Dynamic storytelling and human connection.
Wow.
And I'm an actor.
Okay.
And I also write music. So looking at it through an artist's lens.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very cool. Yeah. What, when I asked you, hey, do you want to come on the podcast? Mm-hmm. What were you thinking when you said, that's what I want to talk about? I'm just really curious.
Well, first of all, I said, I don't have anything significant going on. Why the hell does he want to talk to me?
Content. We're making content.
Well, I love theater, and I have been singing since I was very small. So how does that all connect?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, connection.
Right.
Like, period, end of story, and how we connect with others through different ways, dynamic ways of telling stories.
I love it. That's great. And you sent an MP3.
I did.
Do you want me to share that at the end of the show?
You can if you want. It's still, pretty exploratory.
Yeah.
But have some people who I really care about who collaborated with me on it as far as the track and mastering it and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's the first thing I've ever produced.
Okay.
And so hoping to do more of that with my original music this
year. Well, yeah. So we can put that on at the end of the show.
Sure.
And... yeah, tell me a little bit about what that is, you know, so yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have been writing music for quite a while. I'm mainly a piano player, a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And this song in particular has taken a left turn from anything that I've ever written, my typical style. It's called Into Character. And I stepped into a very tough character.
Mm.
In college, a play called Nine Parts of Desire. It's a monologue play. It started as a one-woman show on Broadway with all these Iraqi women or Iraqi American women throughout the world, throughout time. Each character was a compilation of interviews that the playwright had for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And the main character, her name is Layal. She's based off of an artist, Layla Al-Attar. And she was essentially passed around Saddam Hussein's family. She was an artist over there and the director of one of his facilities. And she created this mosaic of George Father Bush's face on the floor of a famous hotel there. And she was killed in an American airstrike.
Whoa.
Yeah. So pretty wild in the early 90s. And so finding my way into her was a big struggle. And so this song is essentially from my perspective, the actor's perspective, asking a character with a tough story to let me in and to tell them that they can trust me to give their story justice and be 100% authentic with it. But I have to, that I'd have to understand her first.
I think that's fascinating. I have many questions. Where did you go to college?
I went to the University of South Florida.
Okay.
I started as a mass communication major. One of those things like, I'm not going to do theater. I went to performing arts high school. I mean, I did shows there. I knew that's what I wanted to do, but yeah. You know how a lot of us, like our parents were like, you're not going to make money doing that. So
they were right. But we were. The trick is we weren't going to make money doing anything.
Right. That's an excellent point.
We're never going to retire. Yeah. So we might as well do theater.
Right. And I was pre-law for a semester. And I always say if I wasn't an actor, I'd be a lawyer. I think it's fascinating. But really just so I can be dramatic in a courtroom. But it's mostly not that. So I said, not for me. And found my way back to theater performance, which I now have a bachelor's degree in.
Okay, great. And tell me a little more about this show. So it was nine women,
yeah.
But it was a solo show originally on Broadway.
Yes.
Did you perform all of those parts? I mean, did you do the show solo? Or the
I
show
did not.
Solo?
They no. right. took a different direction, and so they had different actors to portray all of the nine women.
Right, right.
Being that it was a monologue show. And because it was in an educational setting, just yeah. to give students more opportunity, I don't think
Make it into
if
an
they
ensemble.
Had pitched a one-woman mm-hmm. main stage, it would have gone very well.
Yeah, that's not very fair in a university setting, yeah, right. for sure. Right. That's interesting. And so did this song... Did you work on the song as in that context, or is this something you're revisiting now?
I wrote the song, actually, it was after a Sam Smith concert. His music is very dramatic. And right. he even said, we were like maybe 75% of the way through his show, and we stopped after this gorgeous ballad. And he said, well, that was fucking dramatic, wasn't it? And I'm like, oh, okay, perfect. So I started like typing the lyrics on my phone and just trying to tell the story as honestly as possible to myself first, mm-hmm. Which is, as an artist, what I try to do in general. And so it had been several years since I had been in that show, but I still look back as that being one of the most transformative experiences for me as an actor.
All right. Great. Well, that'll be the alternative outro for this episode. That's really, that's fascinating. So you're here now in New York City.
I am.
And you have collaborators, and this is the first thing that you've produced, and you're kind of just feeling it out. And that's interesting. Do you want to keep writing music and doing?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm such a writer in general. I never have stepped into playwriting, but I think that's the next venture for me that I'm excited to try.
Okay.
I hear you know some things about that.
I've written a few plays.
So, I'm such a writer and I'm such a musician. So it has made sense for a long time to put the two together. And really the way that we tell a story, I mean, the words that we choose are so important. The specificity is important, that you're connecting with someone else's story. Here's an example. So I went to Sarah Bareilles' Madison Square Garden show recently. And I love her. I feel like she's the artist who I most connect with as, you know, a pianist and a songwriter, et cetera. And she was telling us how, she's telling me specifically, it was just me in the room.
right.
She was telling us how the more specific she got in her storytelling, the more people felt they could connect with it.
Right.
And as an artist, not only do we owe a character a 100% authentic story, and we owe a character a journey in ourselves as the actor to understand what they're going through, but we owe our own story the same authenticity.
I agree.
And that is really what's going to connect us with others the deepest.
It's interesting, that question of specificity, because mm-hmm. you want things to be broad enough and open enough so that people can pour themselves into the story.
Right. So people can relate. And the broader I am, the wider the scope of people I can connect with. But I think it's the opposite.
It's an interesting line. It's a funny thing.
Yeah.
I've never really isolated what I think about it. It's a tricky thing. You mm-hmm. have to decide, I think, in the context for every piece, everything that you work on. But that thing you said about characters being rich and having authenticity, that's mm-hmm. one of my pet peeves in theater.
Oh, no.
New theater. No. No. I'm going to tell you one of my pet peeves.
Okay.
Is plays where there's a character who's, well, everyone, this is obvious, right? You don't want wooden characters. But I really dislike when a character pops into a play and doesn't really have an arc, doesn't really have much to do. And I think the reason is that I acted for a while.
Yeah.
And I may have played, I was never like a really like a leading man, mm-hmm. you know. And we're talking about like a community theater in Minneapolis right. and then some small theater in London. And, but yeah, when I see a play and there's an actor and they're on stage for maybe 15 minutes and don't do much except to maybe drive the story forward a little right. bit, I just go, oh, I feel for that actor. Because it's like, what? You could have, and I think of ways the playwright could have gotten around it.
Right.
I go, this is a two-hander masquerading, you know, as an ensemble piece. You've done this with two characters. What's, you know, that is what it is. I mean, well, so I'm really fascinated by, you know, and maybe this is the show about things people love, so I should reframe this. What I love in theater mm-hmm. is muscular, slim, tight, well-written
yeah.
drama, even Absolutely. If it's comic. And I love seeing a one-person show that tells this, you know, incredible story, a two-hander that really
Likewise.
Just gets you. It's just yeah. so great. So you've yet to write your first play, but you're gonna attempt it in 2020?
Yeah, I'd really like to.
You should do.
I have a really good friend who's an amazing playwright, and he was selected as, I don't know, like one of five of over 200 submissions to some short play festival by
great.
This great young theater group here in the city. And everything he does is very experimental.
Mm-hmm.
So he just inspires me because he shows me that there is no box. Like, we're always trying to think outside the box, but what if the box doesn't even exist? How far can we go? It's truly limitless.
It doesn't. And that's the beautiful thing about theater, is that it's this ancient hologram,
yeah.
right? And
it's, yes.
it has infinite plasticity. Because the audience surrenders their poetic license,
right.
poetic license to the drama, you know, to the dramatist.
That's true.
And yeah, we started, there's a fellow named Tom Block who was on the show.
Yep.
Yeah. He and I got together and we're starting an experimental theater writers group called Cut Edge Collective.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to cutedgecollective.com. And that's going to kick off here in New York this year. So we're excited about
that's
that.
That's great.
And we're going to do a series of salons too. So the way that's going to work is they're going to be workshops. And it's, you know, it's people have had to apply and then there's a bit of a fee because we've
right.
got to rent space.
Of
and
course.
And that. Yeah, yeah. And then we're going to do these salons, and these salons are going to be kind of, you know, once a month, and people are going to talk about a certain topic. And and those are going to be a little more open. So maybe we can, I don't know, maybe I'll, well, anyway, go to cutedgecollective.com.
Yeah, sounds great.
I think the thing to do for you is, and I'm, you know, is to.
I'll take
try
it.
Your hand. Yeah, yeah. Try your hand at a 10-minute play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did a 24-hour play festival on the acting side. But I think things like that where, I mean, I'm so motivated by deadlines. That sounds terrible.
No. My God, yeah.
To be able to, I mean, overnight when your mind is kind of its wildest, to sit at a computer and just be honest with yourself and write whatever's in your mind, whatever's on your heart, and see what it becomes. I mean, I love free writing. I got a journal for 2020. That's like the big thing for me, although I've always loved it, but I've been pretty lazy about it, honestly, as far as sharing my thoughts. I think that especially for when we are vulnerable and honest and open with ourselves and we're sitting there with like a pen and a paper to write and we let our subconscious start to take over.
Yeah.
These things that like maybe we aren't ready to face or that we don't want to face start to come out.
Totally.
And I think that deters some creative people
mm-hmm.
from stepping into that environment. But I told myself 2020 is a year of self-discovery. I'm going to open myself up and be vulnerable enough to face things that even if I'm not ready to face them, it seems like it's the right time.
Mm. I think you should do it. The trick with a 10-minute play is to sit and write it in one sitting.
Yeah.
Write it in one sitting. And ideate, get you know, a notion.
Right.
And just make sure it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yep.
And I wish you lots of luck with that.
Thank you so much.
You want to check out the Playwright Center.
Yeah.
You heard of the Playwright Center?
I have not.
It's a Playwright Center in Minneapolis. And
mm-hmm.
they do fellowships and different programs. And they have a board, an opportunities board that's pretty robust.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you can pay the fee to be a member just to get access to that board. And then
yeah.
they've got this constantly churning list of opportunities. And if you write a 10-minute play and you know, you start to get some positive feedback, it's amazing what that does to your psyche. If you're
Absolutely.
Really hungry to be a writer, it's nice to go, wow, somebody read this and they reacted to it. It's a lovely, lovely feeling.
Yeah, and my friend who's the playwright was never interested in that. And then he just took a playwriting class in college.
Yeah.
And now that's, he's also a puppeteer and does millions of other things.
Great.
But like has discovered this amazing part of his brain.
Yeah.
Gosh, and the stuff he does is just so out there and brilliant. So
I love, what's his name?
Kevin Michael Wesson.
Oh, there, we can't have that.
Yeah.
We can't have two Kevins.
Oh, I know, I'm sorry. No, he can just go
Kevin.
By Michael.
No, it's all right. It's all right. Hey, Kevin, how are you? Nice to meet you. Yeah, no, it sounds great. And what's the name of this festival that he got into? Do you recall?
I cannot remember the name of the festival. Oh, gosh, that's embarrassing.
No, that's
the
right.
name
so many.
Of the theater group that put it together is called Sprout Works. And it's
Sprout
a
Works.
Few folks who are my age who are hungry and brilliant and open and kind of ready for whatever art the world wants to put in front of them. So it's been great being connected with them.
I guess, you know, if you're an actor, that you already have a head start on a lot of people.
Me?
I actually, yeah, as a playwright, if you want to be a playwright.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
That makes me feel
better. No, for real. No, absolutely. I mean, that's the other piece of advice I like to give to young playwrights is if you acted, no, start there. You have to. Mm-hmm. Even if it's if it terrifies you, you have to do it.
Right.
You have to. Or, at the very least, you got to get yourself into a scenario where you're attending readings and participating as a
absolutely.
Reader. The very least, you got to get kind of into the sense of it. But it's so helpful to know what an actor's process, even in a very amateur way, is like for a show.
Absolutely. And I've been, with my own original music, have been devising a script to kind of put it all together, almost like in a one-woman memoir kind of a play,
mm-hmm.
And really exploring deeply my relationships with others, my rocky relationship with religion, my relationship with myself, I think, is the newest part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And people always say that your first 6 months to a year in New York are the hardest.
Uh-huh.
And you think about, oh, it's like hard to find a job and it's like hard to make friends. But like you don't, I mean, at least I didn't think about how hard it would be in my own mind. And so that's the latest, I think, part of this journey for me.
How long have you been in New York?
Since last March. And then I went back to Tampa and I did a show, Stupid Fucking Bird. And so permanently as of July 1.
What is this show, Stupid Fucking Bird?
Oh my gosh.
I don't know it.
Well, I'm so excited to share it. It's weird.
Yeah, no,
I love weird. Like the weirder your art gets, like the more I'm just so intrigued. So it's a modern take on Chekhov's The Seagull.
Ah, okay, right.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
And really exploring mostly, I mean, there's this umbrella of human connection that kind of breathes into the whole play, which, I mean, and I got to work with people I've always wanted to work with. An old professor of mine who's the artistic director of the company came in to direct it. I mean, it was just such a blast and, a really great, weird play. If you haven't read Stupid Fucking Bird, read Stupid Fucking Bird.
Who's the playwright? Someone famous, I think.
Someone, yes. Tom Block mentioned him.
Okay.
I cannot
All right.
quite
no, that's
recall,
fine. We can. Yeah, that's all right. You know, it's like, it's sort of one of the other things I like about this podcast is you know, the phones are away. I'm not going to start tapping at the computer. We're going to, you know what? We don't remember everything. And
that's okay.
Yeah. What's that comedian, Lewis Black? He has that funny bit about how back in our day, if somebody didn't know the answer to something, we just didn't know.
Oh,
we guessed. Now you know, you millennials, you get your phone out. Now you're not at a party. You're doing research.
It's true. It's so true. And even with my significant other on our first date, we were talking about something and I didn't know the answer. I pulled up my phone and he said, "I don't do that."
Yeah.
So we just
stop.
That's the rule now.
Google. It's all there when we need it.
Yes, it is.
If you're really that interested in the name of the playwright for Stupid Fucking Bird, presumably you can look it up.
Yeah, he's great. And it's embarrassing because once you look him up, like you're going to recognize
his name. It'll be obvious.
Yeah,
it's all right. It's all right. I like to play Jeopardy and, you know, that Jeopardy, there's this bar that I go to.
Oh, I was like, oh, were you on the show?
No. But I should have been last night because I was killing it.
Amazing.
There are nights where like I get more wrong than right. And then there are other nights where it's like, I just run the clues. It's so weird.
So is that next for you in 2020, 2021?
I don't want to go on Jeopardy. No. So that's interesting. So you moved here, then you go back to Florida to do this show. Then you come back here. You're living in Spanish Harlem.
I am.
And how's that? How are you finding that?
It's amazing. I'm half Puerto Rican.
Oh.
And I'm really proud of that part of my culture. I did just like cut my hair short and go blonde, but not as a diss to my culture, just because it's something that I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
But to be, and I've also never spoken Spanish fluently, which is kind of a bummer. My mom just didn't want to confuse us because she was confused as a kid, kind of trying to learn English. And
Sure.
But it's been awesome. I mean, there's incredible Spanish food, and back in Florida, I mean, I have family here. I didn't have any family there. So being able to even have home food here in general is so special for me.
Right.
And hearing people speak Spanish, and like, I understand a lot more than I'm able to speak, and feeling connected with them. I mean, connected with conversations that I overhear. Uh-huh. That's been really cool, too.
That is cool. Yeah. Well, and you're in the Heights now, too, so.
I am. I was listening to In the Heights on the way here to, like, get inspired. And, you know, there when I hear a really connected or a really, I don't know, like a song that's intended to be really happy and exciting, but I feel really connected to, it overwhelms me and I cry.
Oh.
Or like when I see people dancing together on stage and it's like beautiful and perfect, I cry. But an In the Heights song, really quickly, that always gets me, it's called Carnaval de Barrio, and it's like the neighborhood carnival, and it's like raise the flag, like raise the Mexican flag, raise the Puerto Rican flag, and everything, and most of it's in Spanish.
Yeah.
And being able to like belt that song in Spanish for me, even in my own mind, I mean, every single time I was just sitting on the train listening to it and I tear up.
Love it. Well, you definitely have to come up here for the Puerto Rico Day Parade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that
I'm
gets
ready.
Pretty real.
Yes.
It's fun up here. I love it. There are a few things that you have to do if you're ever in New York and you want to come up to the Heights. And of course, now it's going to completely blow up when the movie comes out.
100%. 1,000%.
Yeah, they were shooting it on the stairs that I take
Amazing.
Up here. Yeah, it's going to blow up. And you sometimes bump into Lynn in the neighborhood too.
No big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. I went into a coffee shop one day down here, and I'm like, why is everybody? And everybody's kind of looking at me a certain way.
Oh.
And I was like, I'm sensitive. I pick up a vibe. And
of
I'm like,
course.
Do they think that I'm? They're looking at me like they think that I'm. And then I got in line behind them for coffee, and I'm like, oh, everybody's acting weird because Lynn's here. And I'm like, well. You know, and my attitude about that is obviously, you know, great artist.
Of course.
Hugely successful. Yeah. You know, local hero. And you just leave him alone. Let him have his coffee.
Yes, agreed.
And just
He's
leave
just
him
a
alone.
Normal person.
Just leave him alone. He's
and
got
has,
enough on his
is
mind.
Is a master of being very specific in his work and
yeah.
You know, people who are Puerto Rican or Hispanic in general are finding so many ways to connect with him.
Mm.
And he's a legend in Puerto Rico, too.
Oh, for sure.
So.
Yeah. I thought he was so funny on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Did you see his turn?
No,
on Curb?
I have
Do
not.
Do you like Curb?
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's
actually,
funny.
Someone just brought it up to me for the first time ever a few days ago. Is it Larry David?
Yeah, Larry David from Seinfeld. Yeah. It's so funny. He plays himself. And of course, Larry David is somebody who, in theory, should, and in reality, could get pretty much anything he wants in Hollywood. I mean,
Fair.
He's Hollywood royalty. Seinfeld's worth $1 billion. It's crazy. But he can't get Hamilton tickets.
It's like can relate.
Yeah, it's
very relatable.
Yeah, relatable. Oh, so funny. Yeah. And Lynn is kind of lording it over him, and just wonderful, super cool. Yeah. Well, there are a few things you got to do in the Heights. You know, you got to go to see those parades, and then the Cloisters up here is really something special.
Yeah, I keep hearing that.
Yeah,
the magic word.
Yeah. Well, they have the unicorn tapestries.
Is that real?
Are
you bullshitting me?
No, I'm not bullshitting
you. That sounds amazing.
No. They're unicorn tapestries that are quite famous. They're these medieval tapestries, and it's all about the unicorn hunt. And scholars have no idea what it really means. It's like some sort of weird secret society.
Ooh, I love that.
It's really, really bizarre. But you go, and it's just so cool. You know, if you live in the neighborhood, you can go for free. But the other move is you go to the Met, you get the sticker from the Met, it's part of the Met system, and then you come up here, you do a day trip. And there are tons of like, you know, great restaurants and stuff up here.
Yeah,
you should get your SO and make like a day, New York, have a New York day.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
And we love experiencing art really in any way that we ever can. He said he's going to go draw while I'm here. So,
okay.
That's great.
Oh, is he up here with you too?
He's not.
Oh, okay. But he's, okay. But
we went thrifting first thing Saturday morning, and then we just parted ways.
I love it.
To do our artistic things.
Which is cool. I have this writer's group that I'm part of, and we meet at the Dramatists Guild once a month, and it's like, I'm excited about it. We're reading a lot of screenplays today.
Yeah.
We're reading a play today. One of our screenplays is going to be read. We're going to get feedback. And yet there's a part of me that looks outside and goes, it's going to be close to 70 degrees in January.
Yeah.
And I'm getting ready to go sit in a windowless room
for
3 hours. And I'm just like, but I'm really devoted to this group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're talking about human connection, and we're definitely going to have a lot of human connection in that room today.
Yeah.
I'm you can't control the weather, though.
No. It's going to be nice tomorrow. I mean, it'll be warm tomorrow. I think it's going to be rainy.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Yeah, it'll be all right. That group is led by Aaron Squire. And if you haven't listened to his episode on this show, I guess I'm promoting my own show, but I'm really actually promoting Aaron. He's tremendous. He's a Juilliard playwriting alum.
Wow.
Yeah, really brilliant guy. He's working in television on a couple of different shows, and he has this Buddhist philosophy that drives his life and his practice.
That.
And it's just definitely give that a listen. He's all about without sentimentality. He's all about realizing that if you want something, mm-hmm. find people who want the same thing and help them achieve it.
Hell yeah.
It's so cool.
You can literally have whatever you want in this world. Like, especially being in New York, all of the things that seem so far away and seem so impossible growing up are literally right in front of you around every turn.
Yeah. Yeah. It can beat your teeth in, too.
Oh, yes, that also. That's another layer of it.
But. Yeah. So, but I do love this town. And I think it behooves, you know, it's good to for young people to come and get a taste of it.
Especially, when you're in your 20s, you don't have kids. Now's the time to take the riskiest risks. And
do
I'm
it.
Always the one who's going to take the risk.
I like that. Are you have siblings?
I have one older sibling.
Okay, one older sibling.
Yep.
And where are you originally from?
Originally from Virginia Beach, mm-hmm. and then moved to Tampa for school. Stuck around for a little bit. I lived there for 7 years. So I'm kind of 20% Floridian. But if somebody asks where I'm from, I always say Virginia Beach, or I say that I'm Puerto Rican if they're looking at me and they're like, you're something and I can't figure it out.
That annoying question. Yeah. Nobody asks me that.
I'm so sorry.
Nobody asks me that. No, it reminds me of one of my friends, a Dominican gal, one of my very best mm-hmm. friends. And we dated for a while, and she's like, my brother's dating a white guy. And I'm like, my sister's dating a white guy. My brother is dating a white gal. Sorry, I got to get the story right.
All good.
Dating a white gal. It's getting really serious. And I'm like, well, what kind of white is she?
Yeah.
And she says, there are different kinds.
No one ever says, if it's, someone with an American accent, that Irish guy.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
You know?
And I'm trying to explain to her, the same way that, Puerto Ricans and Dominicans, your little differences, your cousins, you respect each other, But, yeah, anyway. So, Virginia Beach, tell me about that. So, what's that like?
So, it's great there. I realized someone I went to middle school with is on The Bachelor season, so that's pretty wild.
Which one?
Victoria Fuller. She's the one who cried the whole first episode. But she is so fucking beautiful. I mean, she was always the nice, quiet, popular girl, so I don't have a problem with her. I mean, TV can edit someone to be whatever they want someone to be. The editor's in charge of the story
totally.
There. It's not in your
for
hands.
For sure.
My dad was in the Navy for a long time, which is why I lived there. And pretty much my entire childhood up until high school. And then I was the only one of my siblings, her and myself, who decided to go far away. Mm. And everyone said, no, don't go. Don't chase after a boy. That's the secret. I chased a boy.
Oh, no.
And he lives here now. It's kind of embarrassing. It didn't work out, but being in Tampa worked out great. And I made lots of great connections. And I'm really involved, or at least I was, in the theater community there. So it was an amazing experience going from this place that has all four seasons mildly to summer, 50 weeks of the year.
Wow.
So.
Right. And is the university close to a beach? Are you able to go do that?
It's not terribly far. I would say it's 45 minutes from one of the top beaches in the country,
wow.
Clearwater. So,
okay.
I mean, the sand's like powdered sugar. Florida's not a real place. It really just exists in our dreams.
I love the Florida man and Florida women stories, too.
Oh, yeah. It's also really fucking weird there. It's beautiful and great in the touristy areas. You go to Disney and it's magical. And, you literally drive, 15 minutes away from Disney into swampland and weird shit starts happening.
Do you have any examples? Anything weird happen to you?
Oh, gosh. I pretty much stuck to the popular places mm-hmm. that were there. So luckily, no, nothing weird for me.
Okay,
that's
right.
Really not exciting.
Yeah, no, that's
but
all right. That's
tried
all
to right. see as much of the beautiful parts of Florida as I could in the short time that
it's
I had there.
It's been a while since I've been to Florida. I'd like to go and visit it again. It has that. It's an odd state because there are so many transplants.
It's
people
true.
From everywhere wind up there. It's
well,
a big
it feels
state.
Like Florida here today. So just
right.
after your next meeting at Dramatists Guild, like go outside and walk around, and that's pretty much a trip to Florida.
I'm originally from North Dakota, and I will be wearing shorts today.
Perfect.
I'm gonna
as you
walk
should.
It. Yeah, that's how it is.
Yeah,
this is.
I didn't shave my legs, otherwise I would be too.
Okay, all right. Now that's immortalized.
In case you're wondering. Yep.
Yeah. Right. So when did you first get into theater?
Wow. So yeah, I was singing first, and so I did chorus in elementary school and middle school, and my middle school chorus program did a musical every year, and I think that I started singing to show off when I was really little. You know, like people are like, oh, my mom's like, go sing, everybody will like you, and everybody will like it. And so I did the musicals in middle school, and then in eighth grade we did Pirates of Penzance, and I stepped into the lead role. I'm really not like a soprano like that, but in middle school, if you can sort of do it, they just put you right in there. And I was so inspired by that, and that experience really moved me, as you know, as far as you can be moved without as much self-awareness as you know you have now.
Sure.
I went to a performing arts high school from there and went for vocal and theater, and that's really where it kind of took off. And everybody had big dreams, and we, you know, they're like, Giselle, like, you need to go to college for theater, you need to go to college for theater. Of course, all the artists around you, and then you have all of this external pressure, and you start caring about what other people think.
Right.
And my parents, I really wanted to do college on my own terms. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I took out loans and everything. Like, I didn't ask them to pay for college.
Sure.
And also, not being financially connected to someone gives you a lot of freedom mm-hmm. in what you can do mm-hmm. with your own life.
Yeah.
So I'm just really glad that I found my way back to it and that it's helped me learn so much more about myself. And I know that every time I open my mind and step into a creative space, I'm going to discover something new.
I think the instinct for that character study to almost invoke the historical character, the figure, especially when you're dealing with someone who existed,
right,
is really potent. I think that's important.
Yeah, it was an incredible journey stepping into her. We also had the playwright on site with us.
What
for
was
a
the
week
show again?
It's called Nine Parts of Desire. The playwright is Heather Raffo, and she, you know, she performed in it when it was here in New York.
And this is about women in Iraq.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, women who are like in ADOC and like connected to it, and even like
you keep saying ADOC.
ADOC.
I don't know what that is.
It's like Iraq.
Oh,
but it's
oh,
like
oh,
EDOC
oh,
is the way
Iraq
that we always
gotcha,
were
gotcha.
Like that's just
okay.
like built into
sure,
my
sure,
system
I
now.
Well, you know, we went down to Iraq and we maybe got into a little bit of trouble there. I
that's
don't know.
How my dad would say it.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
No, okay. Iraq. Gotcha.
But yes.
Yeah.
And it was just again, like kind of all over the world and through time. And there was an American with Iraqi roots who in the show was maybe our age who's watching the war from her living room and how it affects her to be so in her soul connected to that culture.
Yeah.
With really not able to do anything about it.
It must feel terrible. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to be a Persian student right now in the US.
Yeah, absolutely.
And with that, with the plane coming down and, you know, it's Wag the Dog. It's very strange. Hard to know what's going on. You know, Wag the Dog? That's a movie.
Tell me more.
You got to check that movie out. If you've never seen Wag the Dog,
watch it. Wag the Dog.
Wag the Dog. It's David Mamet.
A legend.
Legend. Yeah. Great. Yep. Politically, people have problems, but you know, he's all right. Great writer. But it's all about a president who hires a Hollywood executive to fake a war,
fake
like a skirmish.
Incredible.
Just in order to win an election.
That's so scandalesque.
They talk about it now. It's become a term in the vernacular.
Yeah.
You say, oh, this is a Wag the Dog situation.
Wow.
And I don't know. What the hell do I know? It's just, it's really hard to watch our country remain so embroiled in that region when at home we don't have our act together.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating. Deeply frustrating.
I really couldn't agree more.
I don't think I'm alone in that. I don't understand this obsession we have with this adventurism over there. I mean, I have some sense of what it is, and I know that it's about maintaining the petrodollar and all the rest, and in some abstract way we benefit from that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, boy, it's like they said, I don't want to go too far down this hole, but they said yesterday, it's like, oh, the Dow, you know, hit 29,000 points. I'm pretty active on Twitter, and there's this fellow on Twitter who's like, I can't make my rent. My friends are drowning in student debt.
Yeah.
We can't get health insurance. One illness is enough to bankrupt most of us. But
right.
Congrats on the Dow hitting 29,000. Yeah, you know, and you just go, ah, man, we're in trouble. It feels like we're in trouble, you know. But this show is meant to be somewhat, you know, it's meant to be positive. But
right.
you gotta kind of wonder, you know, we've got, nobody ever asks where the money's going to come from when it comes to the war making power of this country.
It's true.
Very strange.
And also, you have to look at, you know, you have to take a 360 look at a situation to be able to appreciate the positives. So
yeah, well, it's still we're in New York.
This
we're very
tricky.
Fortunate. We're
yes,
in New York.
Very much.
Life is, you know, I mean, you know, I'm gonna go to my writers group later today, and you're gonna step out and I presume shave your legs, and then
that's on the agenda.
I was gonna ask you, you know, yeah, but so you know, you just got to New York pretty recently,
yes.
And then you know what, you know, this time next year. Right when I have you back on the podcast, what do you have going on? You're gonna have written your first play,
right? And I think you know devising the script for this musical that I'm putting together and really connecting all of my songs is priority number one.
Tell me, go ahead.
And also, I work full time in communications, which has really it's one of those things that hindsight is 20/20. Like I look back and I'm like, I should. Full-time have been doing communications because we're finding new ways to tell stories every day in just a different kind of environment.
Yeah.
Which has been really fascinating. But also, like, of course, the typical, like, new actor in New York looking to get into classes and take voice lessons and this and that just to keep my skills sharp, but also doing as much search inward as I can this year after coming out of, like, this mental craziness of the first 8 or so months or of permanently being here. And, you know, now I can step back and process those things. And people say, like, when you're upset, make art.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do that in the moment. Like, I have to kind of come post-peak into where I can say, okay, now I can be honest with myself about what I've experienced.
That's interesting. Have you read David Lynch's book? Do you like David Lynch? You know David Lynch?
I'm not
Blue
sure.
Velvet? Twin Peaks.
No,
Mulholland Drive.
I'm terrible with, media.
No. But David Lynch is somebody you should totally know. He's fantastic. Have you ever seen The Elephant Man?
Ah, I'm like, his name sounds familiar. Yeah, that must be
directed
why.
Directed The Elephant Man. He's one of our great living directors.
Brilliant.
You should see Blue Velvet for sure. If you like Hitchcock.
I do.
He's extremely dark.
Yeah.
Like Hitchcock. Very surreal. You
absolutely.
Like weird?
I do
you
love gotta, weird.
Then you're going to love David Lynch.
Yeah.
Watch, make sure you see Blue Velvet.
Blue Velvet.
But he wrote a book. He's really into TM, Transcendental Meditation.
Okay.
He wrote a book called Catching the Big Fish.
Amazing.
And he's got a great point in that. And he talks about how young artists and the culture kind of, what's the word, fetishizes the idea of the suffering, struggling artist.
Yeah.
And a lot of people kind of make that their identity.
Yep.
And he says, life is suffering.
Yeah.
You're going to suffer. Don't lean into this.
Right.
Don't cultivate that. That's not where art comes from.
Correct.
Art comes from being having like a stable craft and a practice that you can return to and pick up. And he's right.
Yeah. And I, when I moved from Tampa, my boss, who I currently work with, you know, told the team that, oh, she's moving to be an actor. And really, like, my significant other got his dream job. He's a fashion guy. This is really one of the only places for it. So he came up here. I mean, that's the guy I'm going to marry. So I don't feel bad saying that.
When's the wedding?
Don't ask.
Hey, you're on notice, buddy.
I'm not in a hurry. I want to be able to pay for the wedding that I know we want. He's Indian, so it's going to be a whole event.
Oh, wow.
Also.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, you're going to have one there and then one here and...
I have no clue.
Yeah. All right.
But
cool.
I suppose we'll see.
All right.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about David Lynch. We were talking about...
And weird. And my boss told the team that I moved up here to be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, not guilt, but it feels wrong for me to say that. Like, I've always wanted to live here and I want to be an actor in the city. But it feels like I'm one of those people who's like, I don't love auditioning. That's really the only way you do it.
Right.
So kind of exploring how I can maximize on what's fulfilling me right now in my music, and like how as an actor I'm allowed to love more than one facet of art.
Yeah.
And me saying I'm an actor, like people are like, oh, well, you're not acting right now. Like, I don't intend to box myself in
right.
to doing that. Like, I am a well-rounded artist. I have many talents. And just because you're not doing one right now
right.
doesn't mean that you're not that anymore.
Right. Yeah, theater maker.
Yeah.
I'm a theater maker. Right. I'm working on a, you know, you're working on a musical. You're going to work on a short play.
Yeah.
You're going to audition.
And really, for me,
it's... You did your first podcast.
Right. And it's been around, like, lean into what you need to create. So if right now music is what's on your mind, on your heart, lean into that. If you are trying to tell a story in a more theatrical way, lean into that. So mm-hmm. don't feel obligated to do something just because you told someone you're an actor. So that's the one thing that you should be doing.
Right.
But on the side of being a suffering actor, wow. I've been hearing a lot about that lately, and people coming around the corner of that you don't have to be miserable to be an artist. And I feel like people outside of the art community, that's the stigma. They're like, oh, you're an actor. Like, you must be really struggling.
It must be so
I'm
hard.
So sorry. Yeah. And also, like, they're always thinking about the financial side, which I'm not a money person, so I'm never thinking of that. But at the end of the day, it's like there is a song, again, that like song from In the Heights that like always moves me. It's such a positive anthem of culture.
Mm.
And that moves me to tears.
Mm.
And it can be something so positive that overwhelms you. Like, you don't have to be dragged down. Like, the further up you go, the more you can feel that way as well.
Yeah. Oh, music is a huge part of my life. I can't even imagine.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. And it, I mean, as far as the different ways to tell a story too, and what's really inspired me about this song that I sent over to you is that we have, yes, we have the language part, the theatrical part of what specific words we choose to tell our story, but also the music that we put underneath it kind of, it helps us guide others through our own mind.
Mm.
So if, I mean, just the most basic way to put it, if something mm-hmm. is in a minor key,
right,
it's like, this is sad, or this is negative, or whatever, what have you, the words could be, I love my life.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it could be something so basic, so positive.
Right.
But the music underneath is telling others that the story is different.
Creates an irony.
It's bringing them into your perspective in a really special way. And this song has really done that for me. And I feel like as an actor, like I was saying earlier, like when you owe a character 100% vulnerability to tell their story as authentically as you possibly can.
Mm.
It forces you to face so many things in your own journey too. And this character, because she had struggled so much and the character is so, so, so complex, I faced a lot of things personally for the first time.
Mm.
And that was like the time I discovered like my sexuality. Like I don't know, I lost my virginity at 16, but I wasn't acting like I knew who I was sexually.
Sure.
And this character was very sexual, which is why I bring it up.
Yeah.
And then in my acting class, like one of my teachers like knew I was doing this role. And so she gave me like this 20-minute scene from Streetcar Named Desire. And she's like, here you go.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know how long it would have taken me to face that if I wasn't an actor, or like if I wasn't stepping into this role.
I see.
And at the end of the day, this journey of self-discovery and understanding myself to better understand others has helped me find better ways to guide people through their own feelings and help them face things that they're facing on a regular timeline and not like an artist's timeline where in college we see all these things very early.
That's really profound. Yeah. That's so interesting. Grant Morrison is a comic book artist and a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this great countercultural lecture. You can look it up. It's Grant Morrison on sigil magic. And
wow.
It's this quote unquote magical practice where you write a phrase, strip down the letters, use those letters to craft like a witchy symbol.
Wow.
And then you charge it and release it into the world, often with sexual sort of power.
Amazing.
Right? And If you've never heard that lecture, definitely check it out.
Thank
I'll put
you.
A link to it in the show notes.
Sure.
Brilliant. And it's really about changing your own brain.
Yeah.
But he talks about, you know, Aleister Crowley and Austin Osman Spare and these occultists. And he's got this great Scottish accent, and he's like, I'm not going
to
fucking do it. He's
Please
like,
do it. No,
it's terrible.
It.
He's like, you know, but we never fucking do it. So I just thought one day I'm going to get up and I'm actually going to do it. And here's the thing. It works. It fucking works. You know, and he's delivering this lecture to all these hackers, you know, about being able to like use sigil magic and sex magic to change reality. And he's right. And he very famously made a comic book called The Invisibles, and which inspired The Matrix, and it's this cult classic comic book. And he did it intentionally as a meta sigil. So it's a sigil in a sigil in a sigil, you know.
Very cool.
And he's like, that lecture, he says, oh yeah, you can change reality. You can summon familiars and all this stuff is real.
Yeah.
And it's only, you know, our imaginations. And every artist understands this. It's like you're saying, you're channeling this person.
Right.
And bringing in new energy and awareness in your own life.
Right.
And then suddenly you're going to start to notice all these synchronicities and these other.
Yes. And I know that this is like when I was coming into this, on top of the fact that I feel like I have nothing significant happening in my life, but like, I'm here to pitch.
You've got a lot going on.
Thank you so much. It makes me feel much better. I was concerned that when I was looking back at this topic of storytelling and connection, that I wouldn't have anything new to say. And I have an incredible friend who I sat with at a coffee shop for like 2 hours to help me kind of articulate the craziness in my mind.
You prepped for this podcast?
1,000%. I had so many conversations this week. I'm like, I got a journal and I'm like, this will definitely like help me just get my thoughts out. Like,
wow.
All kind of not centered around this, but this was, I mean, the timing really could not have been better. Oh gosh, I really can't even keep a thought.
No, so you have a friend, you met her at a coffee shop and you spoke for 2 hours.
Yeah, met him at a coffee shop. And what were you talking about right before this?
Oh, we were talking about Grant Morrison and sigil magic and the Invisibles and having things to go. You know, you were saying, I've got a pitch. Goodness. That's all right if you lost your train of thought. That's okay.
I did.
It
but
happens.
The point, and I mean, all of my, my exploration is that I feel like I had nothing new to say about it.
Right.
But my friend Christian, I mean, has been one of my best friends since high school. And we kind of found ourselves back in New York City at the right time. He said, this isn't a podcast just for artists. Like, there are things that are, when they are reiterated, like, people need to continue hearing that. Like, people need to continue hearing, tell your story as authentically as you possibly can. Like, be specific. Be fearless.